Hey, and welcome to another edition of the Rugby Report Card. Coming to you live on Wednesday, the 17th of April. A bit late this week, boys, but I'm excited about the questions that have been asked on Twitter. Hopefully, we'll have a really good chat. And thank you to, obviously, all those people who have sent a question in. I'm sure we won't get through all of them, but we will do our best.
Yep.
With us this week is Jim. How are you, mate?
Yeah, mate. Be here live and raw on this Wednesday. It's good. It's very good.
You are always live and raw, Jim. And with us also is Blake. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. You do understand, Jim, that it's not live.
I know. Richard said live. I had it raw.
What did you add? Here we are, live. April 17th, 7:27 p.m. Into your ears, listeners.
I like that. Just trying to add something, boys. Just trying to add something different to this wonderful chat that we have every week. And talking about something different is the Q&A. Fire away, Blake. What's the first question that you've got? Let's get this show on the road.
All right. Let's jump in. Look, I actually quite like this as a question. Reckon you should still talk about the Tars Crusaders game because it was awesome. And I don't disagree with that. So who wants to take that question?
Yeah, I just want to start off by saying as a Tars fan who tipped the Crusaders on the footy tipping competition, I'm absolutely glad that I was wrong. As a neutral, I say from a neutral first, it was a spectacular game, you know, in terms of high scoring, lots of really good enterprising play, lots of great finishes. From a rugby perspective, there was obviously areas that could be tightened up from both teams, but from a viewing point of view and the fact that I'm a Tars fan, absolutely out freaking standing. And a golden point has its obviously downsides, but the fact that Will Harrison kicked that penalty to tie it up and then kicked the golden point, drama which will make players and make the fans come back obviously week after week. And you know what, in previous years to beat the Crusaders twice in a season, you would be absolutely loving life. It's just a shame that the Crusaders are not the Crusaders, but let's not focus on the negatives, because there were lots of positives. And to start off with that team, Jed Holloway continues to play well. Good to see Fekete coming back to form in that 12 jersey. I like the fact that obviously Harrison came back, you know, came in. Not only did he kick the field goal, but the drop goal, but he did steer the team around really well. I like the fact that DC had some balls to drop Marky Mark to as well. Some areas of weakness in that scrummaging, but the Tars, what a win. Finally, a home win, the last Super Rugby team to get a home win on the board. So congratulations to them.
Yeah, a little less tactical than you, Richard, but this game had all the hallmarks of a traditional tango. We had the Crusaders pursue and the Tars withdrew. Then the Tars pursued and the Crusaders withdrew. It was an absolute love affair, an impassioned tango that had you on the edge of your seat, right? Because you'd watch it from a Tars perspective, you're like, ah, fuck, here we go. Oh, yeah. Ah, fuck. Just their inability to sort of sustain any pressure, the to and fro, as a viewer, like you said, it's as good as it gets, mate. It's good as it gets, particularly when it comes out on top. I just left now, and I know I thought Tane Edmett played a pretty decent game, kicking some pretty key goals there. But at the end of the day, when Will Harrison put the tee down, kicks the one that mattered. Fucking, I don't know, man. Are we watching the slow takeover of the 10 jersey at the Tars right now?
Mate, I called for it last week. Tango, that's a Seinfeld reference there. Well done, Jim. I quite enjoyed that.
Gonorrhea.
Edmed, Harrison. Yeah, mate, I called for it 2 weeks ago. I don't think it's a slow takeover. I think it's an inevitable takeover. The Will Harrison story is an incredible story, mate. How brave of that kid to just hang around and stick in there. It brilliant. What a moment. The whole end of the game is just fucking batshit crazy, because the ref said, you're right to play out. The stop clock goes longer than the game clock.
Yeah.
You're right to play it out. And then the kicker went, all right, sweet. And then 5 seconds to go, he goes, kick it. And he kicks it like on the hooter. I was like, all right, well, that's clearly full time. And it wasn't full time. And then the Crusaders fuck it up. Tars get the ball. Like, you can't write that stuff. But I'd be so livid if I was that Crusaders goal kicker. Like, if I just took off my Tars colored glasses for a moment right now, I would be blowing up deluxe as a Crusaders fan. But fuck it. It led to a fairy tale. It was absolutely incredible. It was just what New South Wales rugby needed. Tars haven't had a great season, but they've had some great moments. And this was another one, and they deserve to steal one. You know, I think DC said that at the end of the game. You can't keep losing the close ones. Eventually, you will win one. I think this was their sixth one this season. Oh, yeah. So it was really cool to see.
What a cup winning strategy that is. Great catch.
But do you know what? I really liked that comment from DC. At the end of the game, he stood on the field and he fucking just sounded like a Bob. He just sounded like one of the fellas, so relieved and so happy. You know, every coach does that bullshit, stoic, stony face. Yeah, there's some areas for improvement there. Definitely some things we need to work on. Definitely some learnings we can take out of that game. I was pleased with the way the boys hung in there, but there's some definite learnings we need to take away from that. Shouldn't let it get that close. There was none of that bullshit. He was just, how good? We got it done. How good? And I just thought that was so refreshing to see just the relief on his face. I think with the pressure and the stress that he's had all season, to just have a moment. It doesn't paper over the cracks of their season, but it's just a nice moment, which was really cool to see. Other notable performances I'm going to jump on largely with you, Richard, which was Fekete, sensational. We've got another question about him coming up. I thought he was sensational. I thought Tristan Riley, has he had a season? And it's, you know, he's had quite the career, Australia A's, Australia under-20s. Then he had the stint in the NRL, played Australia 7 straight out of school. There was high hopes on this kid, and to see him just delivering.
You're not wrong, Matt. I'll tell you what, the two players that I noticed, and I don't mind if you're interjecting here.
Please.
Variation in vocal tones, but Dylan Peach, didn't he have a game distributing and running the ball? And then Swin Shady. I don't know if you're loving the blonde streaks, but Swin Shady absolutely barnstorming aggression during this game.
It's the real Lockie Swinton,
isn't it?
Can I say standing up?
He stood up.
Could I say something controversial now? You two are going to shoot me down like anything.
Lockie Swinton. Come on, drag us down to the gutter.
You're right. Lockie Swinton played really, really well. I think there's a huge element there. There's still an issue with that back row combination for the Wallabies. I'm not saying that he's definitely going to be in this.
Wallabies? System. What are you, fucking nuts?
Yeah, exactly.
Goes I'm not with saying, the locks. It goes I'm with not, the hell.
I'm not saying that, but.
Sounds like you said.
Does anyone think that he needs to, he doesn't move because he's put on so much mass. He is so much bigger than what he used before. And maybe because it's the tuck shirt, which is very on point, by the way. But I just feel like I don't know whether he's lost that agility to really get to that top level as a six to be able to change direction laterally. He's very big and very strong and he's doing really well. But I don't know whether he's just, as I say, lost that a little bit of agility to get to the absolute top. I know he's excelling in Super Rugby Runner.
Has he been injured for 6 years, Richard? Has he been injured for 6 years? Give him a chance.
Get back to top speed.
Let's just let him play into the season a bit. He's barely played a few games in a row. The fact that he hasn't given away a red card yet should be celebration enough.
Which was all his issue. That was what his problem was. He was okay if he could stay on the field. So it's good to see him get some back-to-back minutes here.
I just love it's very Pokita-esque. His no bullshit hard running. It's a damn shame he's signed.
It's Bocky. It's Bocky, isn't it?
It's Bocky. It really is. The fact that he signed for overseas already for next year is super depressing.
Has he?
Because I feel like, he's gone. I feel like we've never got to see the full package. Lockie Swinton standing up in the high viz. But I thought him and Hannigan just carried the ball so, so well, which I thought was awesome. The other bloke certainly worth mentioning is Heaven. We'll be above those puns. I love watching this kid because he is, what is it, the 19th ranked hooker in New South Wales. He is clearly, I'm just going to be honest and just polite here. He's not up to the standard, but his heart, man, he just keeps going. And by the end of the game, he was in good positions because he just kept working. And then to end up with a try, I fucking love watching that bloke play. Like, he is just your regular Joe giving it his level. I'm on board for Heaven. So it's, good on you. Good on
it's
you.
It's the gratitude you get from a dude who shouldn't be there but found himself there.
Yeah.
Just like,
You could almost make a team of it. I'm thinking Shoot, Prop, Heaven, Hooker. All right, that's all I got. I've got 13 to go. But I reckon you can make a team of gratitude.
You're doing a 1 to 15 of gratitude players.
1-15 of
gratitude.
If only we had a patron here, so that would have been a great little segue. That could have been a great little deal for us that you could work out over the next week, mate.
I like what you've done there. Hey, since we're at that question was from Matt Johnson, by the way, and we got a bit sidetracked there, but suck shit, Crusaders. One comment on them. Reece, he's like he's playing on cheat codes compared to every other player on the field. If the ball ever got near him, it was just insane. Anyway. That question was from Matt Johnson. The next question leading off from that, Richard Field. What do you think about that name? Another dick. Nice. He says, Paul Carley reckons Fichetti should be number 12 for the Wallabies. What do we think? Richard, talking to you, same name.
Yeah, sure. Look, I think, and I know this is a cop-out, the question, but it really does determine how he wants to play, how Smith wants to play. Because if you look at it with scrapping the Giddo law potentially moving forward.
Apparently there's a myth.
Okay. Well, anyway, you've got to think about who are the players you're going to select. If everybody is fit, then you have, I don't think Fichetti's probably in your best, probably three or four centers, probably on reputation and form at the moment. However, do I think he's the best 12 right now in terms of the Australian Super Rugby teams? I'd still say no, because I really like Tua at the Brumbies. I thought he's had a really good year so far. But Kenny's been playing really well. So it wouldn't shock me if he's in there. But I just think there's a better centre partnership for the Wallabies at the moment.
He's the most experienced 12 we've got running around. If you look at it, Tua's not got no Wallaby creds.
Is he eligible, Tua? Or is he Kiwi?
He might be. And the other name that obviously springs to mind would be Paisami, who, once again, you pick him, he sort of is, got his name on the jersey already, but it does require a certain lane. He's been a bit up and down. He hasn't been a perfect fit. We were swinging off in the first two, three rounds, but hasn't really got it done in the last few weeks.
Yeah, and then he's got a little more.
Yeah, that too. And he is a bit prone to injury, as you could probably argue for Fichetti, and that should trip right into it. So I reckon those two are your sort of centers that you pick, looking to get the 12 jersey. And either one could probably slide across to 13 should the series sort of go like that. So I would be surprised if either of those two were in the squad, with Paisami probably getting the 12 jersey for the day, just based off, you know, numbers, just based off minutes on the field this year.
It really is interesting because Paisami, we said at that international level, just isn't quite big enough. He plays big enough, but maybe he isn't big enough. And he's not, I don't know if he's consistent enough with his body of work. When he's on, he's red hot. Tua, I don't know if he's eligible. I don't know if he's there yet.
No, he's not. I don't think so. Just looked and he hasn't been there long enough, I don't think,
though. No. Bloke at the Rebels, no, mate. From what I've heard, I can't say I've watched a second of it, Karevi is not playing well in Japan. He's not having a particular anything type of season. And I wonder at his age and his history of injuries, is he your two-year project? Are you picking and sticking with Samu Karevi? And if you are, fair enough. I've got no argument there. But I don't know if he's playing well enough. I actually think Fichetti's almost your last man stand. I don't know, man. I think I've just talked myself into this, and I know most people won't support me. But I'm Carter Gordon 12. I genuinely am, I think, at this point. I just pick him over everyone we've mentioned, bar Samu Karevi. And I think we've got a plenty of 13s. Ikitau, Parise, Fluke, even Delgano is playing brilliantly for the Rebels at the moment, but I don't think any of them can play 12. So I don't know, for lack of 12s, I'm Carter Gordon for 12. I don't think many people would agree with me. But yeah, that's where I am with it.
Interesting to see what happens. And I don't mean, this isn't a saying.
I don't think Schmidt will do that, but that's what I'll.
And I also don't mean this disrespectfully, but it is a bit disrespectful. You've got a three-test series against a team. Yes, I know, obviously you lost two in the World Cup, but I think you're moving in opposite directions right now. I think the Wallabies are going to be in a more positive headspace. New manager, start of a new new tenure. I think there's going to be a much more positive mindset. There's the Welsh are going backwards right now. Obviously, the worst team in the North based on the Six Nations. Obviously, this just happened. Maybe it is an opportunity to try something new, because you know, you're not trying a new partnership against a South Africa and Argentina or an All Blacks team, which is obviously way more risky. So maybe you bed in a new partnership that starts into this Welsh series.
It's a real problem question, because there's problems everywhere for Schmidt, but at least 15 is options, 10 is options, 9 is options, 8 is options. You're picking from options. I think 12, you're not. And props, with the amount of injuries we've got right now, I'm not sure if you are picking from options there. But let's jump on to the next question. This one I think is directed for you, Jim, because you've played in the forwards and the backs. Karen Hardy. Aaron Hardy asks, why do forwards make better lovers?
Just the intimacy. They're comfortable with the intimacy. They're always packing down and getting a bit closer. They're not scared to grab someone and hold them close, which, you know, depending on your love language, means a lot. And backs, they're all about avoiding intimacy. They don't want to get tackled. They want to avoid the shoulder to sort of lean into and rest on and whisper.
That's sweet. They're happy to go solo too.
Well, I think end of, that's sort of what it is, you know.
Richard, should we weigh in on that one, or are you good?
I think that's one of the best answers Jim's ever given. So I think we should move on really to the next question. But
all right, next one. This is a good segue. Not at all. This is from JK. Here's one for you, Richard. Why do people always want to change rugby rules? Why can't we just keep them stable, get on with it, play the game?
I agree. I think we need to be able to play the rules. And look, there needs to always be an evolution to make the game, for example, quicker. There's too many times where I love scrummaging, but I think it still takes too long. But yes, the obsession with that to change them for particularly down this end to try and make it more appealing. Just leave the game alone. Leave the laws alone. You know, it's flourishing in the Northern Hemisphere at the moment. The game is a good game. It's unique. It's more complex, yes, absolutely, than, you know, other games such as association football or rugby league or whatever. But yes, just leave it alone. There, for many years, it's what, the third highest watched sport in the world after like the Olympics and third or fourth behind the Olympics, the Champions League final, then it becomes the Rugby World Cup final. Like, leave the game alone for a bit. Yes, small tweaks here and there, but yeah, it needs to be left alone for a while.
Jim, anything to weigh in on that?
Well, just think more tactically. I reckon just teams sort of see how what rules getting governed. Like, because it does feel like there are, you know, some rules that they decide to look away. Like, when was the last? Do you remember when it was all the craze from the side? Every second penalty was from the side. And from the side's happening every game right now, but very rarely is it getting picked up. You know, their priorities for how they want the game to be played and the safe nature of which they want it to be played dictates what rules they sort of push the most.
Interpretation
too is a huge part of the game. It's what makes the game exciting in some circumstances. And I think teams, when they clue in, they try and play a way in which suits their team and their style. I think that impacts how the laws are put on. And
they try to make it easier. Why do we need to change? I'll just answer that, which is twofold. One, competition with other sports, competition with advertising, TV. It's got to be a captivating product in a market like the Southern Hemisphere. There's a lot of competition. So that'd be point one. And then point two, and I think you alluded it to then, Jim, players and coaches are very far from cluey. If it's skewing this way, they'll find a way. If it's skewing that way, they'll find a way to make it work for them, which is kind of cool until it becomes unbalanced. Case in point would be something like, you know, putting 6 forwards on an 8-man bench or 7 forwards on a bench. Do you need to have a rule for that? I'm not saying you do at this stage, but I think we've got too many reserves, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if coaches find a loophole, then do you need to tweak the rules to address said loophole? And I think the nature of rugby having so many rules leads to that being an inevitable dance that will probably never end.
And on that point, I think you look at the Crusaders and the All Blacks in the years gone past, not to take away any form or any type of, you know, grandeur that they deserve, but they were so smart in the way they defended within their 22. They were so smart about it, which made them an outstanding team. And that just is not allowed. So we have to change rules.
Yeah. All right, let's move on.
Just one thing on that. Yeah. Just about in terms
That was a joke, that last bit.
Right. Yeah, I know.
I tuned out, mate.
just, Just the product point. I think the product point is more of an issue in the Southern Hemisphere. You say it's got, you know, it's competing. Yeah, absolutely. Rugby has as many sports, if not more, to compete with in the Northern Hemisphere.
Can I say competing? I'm being generous. It's losing.
Yeah, but that's the thing. And that's the status rather than, and the laws don't need to change that. The status needs to change. And that comes from success and other things. You know, there are as many sports up in the Northern Hemisphere, but it's just valued more and has a greater standing ingrained in culture and stuff like that. But I think it's to your point, Jim, it's about interpretation of the ref. And you're right, whether it's pinging the hands on the floor for the jackler, but I just don't want it to change so much that you, those unique things about rugby, about having the jackler, about making sure that you can do all the things that you can, doesn't get watered down, that it just becomes into this fast flowing hybrid game of seven / rugby league. That's all.
I think we all agree with the essence of the question, which is we love rugby. We don't want to change it.
Yeah.
Weeks are understandable. Next question. Richard's hogging up our questions here because I'm scrolling up. Darby Lancaster, he's a clear talent, and injuries aside, he will play for the Wallabies one day. How long do you take to blood in? Is Corey Toole currently ahead of him because he's been playing 15s for longer? I'll jump in and answer this one to begin with. How fucking good was Darby Lancaster? He has been sensational at the Rebels. And dare I say it, because we didn't get a review of the games, I think that at Rebels team, we were way off in the first few weeks. Their culture, and I think a lot of that's Nick Stiles, is the mail I'm getting. They have a really good, the way they're able to bring players through, the way able to bring Tupo off the bench, bring him into fitness as the season goes on and get more out of him. Blood players like Lancaster on the wing and get a lot out of them. I think there's something going on down there in Melbourne. I think, well, sort of in spite of the issues, they're doing really well. So Lancaster was sensational on the weekend. I even tweeted Ben Tune vibes, that sort of he gets the ball on the wing and
that's a great tweet. Ben Tune vibes.
Something happens with him on the wing. He's a big body, he's fast body.
Yeah. With a name straight out of an Emily Bronte novel.
Yeah. Mate, no complaint here with Mr. Lancaster.
He's doing, and I just don't know if he's quite the villain yet or he's the one you want them to date or whatever.
Darby Lancaster.
But look, he's the villain. He's ticked all the right boxes.
He's played a lot of rugby. But I know there's a question, and he comes from that sevens, which I think you look at Corey Toole, it's almost what wingers need. So that, you know, the games where they're catching a cold, they can find their way into the game because of their sevens background. He probably will be a Wallaby one day. But I do think us in particular and Australian rugby in general definitely have this problem. Someone puts two good weeks together and we're calling for them to be a Wallaby. And this would be case in point us doing that. So let's just see how it goes on for Mr. Lancaster. I do have high hopes. I do tend to agree that it'll probably be a Wallaby one day. The wing stocks are quite stacked at the Wallabies, but it is very interesting how you play it. Because we've got other questions about Wallaby selections and stuff. So Noaini Tuasi, get fucked. You go a league. Corabetti, do you bring him back? He's been our best player for the last few years, but has he got 2 years in him or do you move on now? And then, all right, will you take those two out of the mix? Who are you looking at? Kellaway, Wright, Jorgensen, they're all 15. You know, they can all confidently play on the wing, but none of them's an out-and-out finishing winger.
You just got to look at the team you're coming up against because it's a must win.
The wing balance of the Wallabies is a fascinating one, and I probably Corey Toole deserves to be ahead of him. That electric pace. Where do you guys sit on Lancaster? Is he a Wallaby this year, or just hold your fucking horses? Let the guy play Super Rugby. Get a body. Yeah.
You need to settle.
If you're that, then my answer is Corey Toole a Wallaby winger this year? What do you think?
You go, Richard. You go.
No, you go, Jim. I don't interrupted you. Go for it.
I was just going to say, settle your kettle on the Darby Lancaster vibes. Corey Toole is probably put a bit more back to back.
Why'd you add an O there?
Corey Toole.
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't realize I did that. Anyway,
that's how you get right into the goals.
Absolutely. Coring to his football back-to-back good performances together, he probably offers you a way more X factor than Mr. Darby Lancaster does. At this point, you think of the back line and the team you want to shape. Largely, the Brumbies outfit is the most successful, and he's a beneficiary of a great little thing they got going there. And you sort of want to stick to that momentum as you come into the Welsh series because it's a must win. So I think Toole ahead of Lancaster, but I don't know how long Toole's game can last.
Richard?
Yeah, in terms of Darby Lancaster, yes, he will be a future Wallaby. I like his size over Corey Toole at the moment, but to use your phraseology, yeah, just currently farm guys at the moment. He's played like, what, 4 games or 5 games of Super Rugby. Corey Toole has, you know, had a season and a bit now. So he has the proverbial jersey over Lancaster at the moment. However, you know, as I say, I do like Lancaster's physicality, his size, potentially moving further forward. But yeah, Toole for me over Lancaster at the moment. Great sample of work at the moment.
Next question, Cyber K. Any early thoughts on players Joe will select for the Wales test? Question one. Question two, is there enough time for him to get a blueprint onto the Wallabies in that season to be ready for the Rugby Championship? I think for the Wallaby selection stuff, I guess I'll say two things. One, we might just hold on that because that ends up being an hour-long podcast. And we might prep 1 week when we think we're ready. We could all pick our own version of the Wallaby team. I think we're alluding to it anyway. In terms of what Joe Schmidt's thinking, point two, I think there's absolutely no way of knowing. So why don't we just answer the second part, and I'll throw to you, Richard. Can the Wallabies gel under Schmidt's style in just the series against Wales and I think the one game against Georgia prior to the Rugby Championship? Is it enough time?
Look, I think you'll definitely get an upturn. I think you'll see his blueprint starting to emerge because I think he'll be the stronger force over the two teams. So I think that you'll win the battle up front. And so therefore, I think it will be easier to see the blueprint in action. However, 3 games is not long enough to make a real impact when you're under pressure. So when you place a more challenging team, you know, one of the aforementioned big dogs down here, New Zealand or South Africa, I think you revert to type sometimes. It's easier to do that. And so as a result, I don't think Joe Smith will have a long enough time to really make an impact. He might by the time you get to the Autumn Internationals or Spring Tour, because obviously he will be training as well, but you'll definitely see a change, yes.
Jim, anything to add on that one?
Nah, I'm pretty bang on with Rich there. I tend to agree with everything that he alluded to.
I think you hit the nail on the head there too, mate. We've got a few versions of this. Hugh Tindall asks, I mean, the question will be essentially, what is happening to the Reds? Rona Leach asks, what the fuck is going on with the Reds? What's going on with the Reds, boys?
Well, they're losing in a nutshell.
I have picked up on that.
Just going backwards. Just going backwards at the moment. Just ill discipline at the moment in that last game. Just don't really know what was going through their head. Just saw, got a bit red rage, you know, in their brain, you know, particularly Tabor Dermott. And it's a big moment for them this week coming up or against the Highlanders. Because to your point, Blake, you've said the Highlanders are shit. And for them to turn a corner, they need to be winning this game because if not, they're going to be on struggle street, you know, because they play the Blues after that, the Crusaders away after that, and then suddenly it becomes an epidemic of losing, which is what the Reds are not wanting to do.
And two, I think one of the suspensions for 3 weeks and the Sierra Uru out for 3 weeks.
And I think also
a lot tougher.
Yeah, and then that was just to be about a second point. Their pack is just, they started off really well, and I don't think their pack has gone quiet in the last few games, and they're not winning up front.
What I've sort of noticed in the games that I've watched in them of late is something that I call overtrusting the process, where they had some excellent success in rounds 1 to 4, get the bye week to excellent success, that their belief in what they were doing was going to be a winning model for the season. The overtrust in the process, where that comes under scrutiny is the lack of effort. It requires maximum effort all the time. They just rested on their laurels to be able to score points, win set piece, and win at the end of the day. You know, whatever minute they found themselves losing, they had enough belief in the process that they could win the game, and they've seen that fall apart because the effort hasn't been there, and now they're looking around asking questions, and they don't know where to go. And a leader needs to stand up, and two of them just got suspended for 3 weeks.
Yeah, and I think And I think Les Kiss was aware of this. When everyone was getting so excited early in the season, he was like, it's just two games. It's just three games. Everyone chill. I think that forced banana peel game really fucked them and got in their heads a bit. I think what's happened with the Reds, and Les Kiss, I think, probably knew this. New coach, bought in systems, the team lifted by 50%. And in the preseason, because they didn't have quite as many internationals, they probably had a better preseason with a full squad with a new coach. I reckon they've had a ripper preseason. So they've come into the competition at full tilt as other teams with more internationals, with, you know, boring old coaches are finding their feet as the season goes on. And it's a horse race. The Reds have led it and they just didn't have anything left in the tank to keep going as everyone else brings players back from injuries, yada, 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 yada. I think that just the field has caught up to them in that respect. And then I think the one tactical error Les Kiss has just got horribly wrong. You just can't fuck with your 5'8". And I know he's said publicly that, you know, Lyon is so young, it's about keeping him fresh throughout the season. But the fact that they're playing with three tens effectively, and Crichton's simply not up to it. I know the big names on the Crichton boys, I've never seen him play a good game of rugby, I'm going to be honest with you. Crichton playing 10 is just not closing out the last 20 minutes of games. McLaughlin Phillips, I'm big on him, but he's probably good for the last 5-10. I don't think he can be leading a team around for 70 minutes. And I just think if you've got it wrong at 10, it's pretty hard to manage the game. And since they've gone away from Lina having big minutes, they've struggled. So that's my probably clearest indication. And I think other teams have worked them out in the sense of you can attack their breakdown. All of their Uru Wright, Wilson McWright like to touch the ball in offense. Not as much as they like to just put their head behind another bloke's ass and put. And I think other teams have worked that out.
Agreed.
Bit of intimacy.
What's that?
Bit of intimacy.
Bit of intimacy. Comes back to Karen's question, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
Any other questions on that? Or should we move on?
Move on.
You've got your ear to the ground, Richard. Dodger 2874 asks, any inside scuttlebutt on the Rebels' future?
Look, you know that I have no idea. So I'll throw to Jim, who normally understands what's the talk of the town. So Jim, what do you know, mate?
Which blokes are going
to
bail on?
Rumblings are Rebels to stay.
Rebels to stay. Heard it here first. No, that isn't the mail that Ridge conglomerate, I love that source of words, consortium of rich blokes are going to buy it, piss their money up the tree.
An oligarch who's on board.
Good. And have them move out to, which sounds really cool, a more suburban Polynesian part of Melbourne and play out of a local rugby stadium, not the big one. Fucking sounds great. I hope all of that's true.
In practice, you can't do that.
Well, if they're going to pay, you can.
Yes, they're going to pay, you can. But you're just like, something's lost in the quality of the game. Like, I don't know, I won't say. Yeah, the Rebels. They're here to stay. That's the Rumblings.
The Rebels. Look, there's quite a few questions here, boys. Let's power through them. Kick the Ref and the Ghoulies asked, should Sevens participation be a requirement for all Super Rugby players and above, even club rugby players? Thoughts?
I think the Sevens pathway is a great option. I don't think it's a requirement because rugby is a game of all shapes and sizes. However, I think particularly in the junior U groups, you know, I think that playing that seven style, you know, in the summer season or something to continue to hone those skills. I know we shouldn't be specializing too soon as kids because obviously that could lead to repetitive injuries. But I think everyone having that opportunity to learn those one-on-one skills and to juggle over the ball, I think for backs particularly is a great skill set. But we mustn't get seduced too much, you know, because ultimately a game of rugby is won because if you do the grunt up front and you do really well at set piece. So yes, there's a place in there. And I think it's a good skill to have, but I don't think we should mandate it for everybody.
Jim?
Yeah, it can't be mandated. Nah, it can't be mandated.
I think it'll just become more natural as there is more sevens. Like, it was a bit of an anomaly when we were kids. Now it seems you will come across it if you play rugby, don't you think?
Yeah.
And I think Rugby Australia would be nuts if they don't start selling it. That's how you could get public schools back into rugby without having to learn the complexities of the other parts of the game. All right. Calvin Riley asked, thoughts on the Super Rugby competition so far? Two Aussie teams and two Kiwi teams in the top four and two each in the bottom four. What do we think of the season so far?
And as good as we've seen, mate. As good as we've seen in recent years. I really, really mean that. There are some absolute ripping games. Australian teams genuinely in contention before kickoff. You genuinely in contention. So it's a much more even comp. And even the teams that are meant to win it, you find them losing.
And every round, there's an upset too. And there's close games. Like last year, we would just come on and rattle off who's going to win. It'd be pretty black and white, wouldn't it?
Oh, mate, it's so much money that you're top of the chipping cup.
Rich, what do you think of the competition so far?
Yeah, I love the competition this year because as you quite rightly say, there isn't as clear cut it is as in previous rounds. I think also from the neutral perspective as well, there's been so many more points this year as well, just due to the different ways that the breakdown has been being played. So I think that's led to a more entertaining, in inverted commas, game because of the amount of points that have been scored. But also more to the point, the fact is that New Zealand teams are down the bottom. It is about the fact that we're not waiting until round 7, 8, 9, 10 until an Aussie team beats a Kiwi team. You know, it's happened early.
Still haven't been in the top three though.
Don't be all negative, Blake. Why bring it down? You know? But yeah, I think for the competition as a whole, I think it's really good. And look, if you've got Highlanders in 10th with 11 points, you know, and you've only got the Chiefs in 5th with 23, that's not that big a difference when you've obviously got bonus points and wins in between. So yeah, it's a much more competitive competition this year. So as a product, really good quality, probably down, but product massively up.
Yeah, but I think it is always down after a World Cup year.
Absolutely. Great.
That's part of the cycle. One thing I would say about the competition though, I agree with all that positivity, but I'm going to be nag-nally here and say there's still just a piece, an ingredient missing. Like this, it just still feels like it's a lot of games in front of empty stadiums.
I think also that I think for the Wallaby team, for the Australian teams, it'd be nice to make sure that they play everybody home and away too. Because they agree. And that doesn't happen obviously at the moment. So I think
that would be nice. I think stadiums still not water cooler chat. It hasn't cut through. It's still missing some magic. But
empty stadiums, since you've seen that across multiple codes, mate, whether it's the A-League, the NRL, cost of living through more $18 tickets is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I turned onto an NRL game the other day and I watched for like literally 2 minutes. There was no one there either. So I think it's a result, as you say, of cost of living, Jim. And I think the Waratahs crowd on Friday or Saturday, whatever day it was a good sized crowd.
Yeah, and the stand coverage, it's too good. Why would you leave?
Good coverage. All right, last one or two, and then maybe we can just do next week. There is talk around the ghetto law being scrapped. Apparently that's been reneged, the journalists who released that. But where are you guys with it right now, the ghetto law, blah, 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 blah? Where do you see it? Should we have it? Should we not have it? You got players like Matt Tamua coming out on his podcast saying, get rid of it. We should be playing Super Rugby and then picking the best 23 blokes to play for Australia. End of discussion. No brainer. Other people saying once you do it, it's the death of Super Rugby, blah, 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 blah. What do you guys think?
Look, are we at a point where we need to abandon it and then see? Get some data on what it will actually look like, what these players will do and where they will go? Because you can just instill it once again. I mean, it'll absolutely shatter it for another decade while players adjust and they'll be off it because they were promised one thing and signed another. But all the chitter chatter about it seems like it's on the way out. But to be honest with you, if I was the man making the decisions, I'd keep it. Super Rugby is way too important.
Richard?
Yeah, I think players have that, you know, yes, there's freedom of movement. You know, even in England, it's been years, as soon as you play overseas, you've never been allowed to play for England. And there's even been chat about it being disbanded over there as well, because more and more players are going to find money, you know, overseas in terms of France. I think you have to be careful what you wish for. To your point, it might be the death of Super Rugby. However, it might actually be the opposite way. If there is a mass exodus of players, it might actually make the competition better, in inverted commas, not the product. The product might be worse, but the competition might be better. But I also think you need to, I'm not really answering the question here, but I also think with rugby, it is all about combinations way more than other sports, where you think about football, for example. Yes, center half, center midfielders, but they can play in multiple, they play similar ways. I think playing regularly together as a center partnership or a back three or whatever is so unique to rugby. I think it will be lost if they all play in different places. So you answer your question, I can see it being disbanded because obviously the lack of money in Australia and going overseas, and ultimately the Wallabies are the product that you want to do. You want them to be the most successful thing in the country.
Name a player, Blake, who's come back and is shredded in a Wallaby jersey.
Yeah, they go over there and get fat.
Will Skelton played a lot better since he's been overseas.
The argument is basically Ireland v South Africa. South Africa are the let them play everywhere and we still win every World Cup.
But he had a point to prove, Skelton. You know, he had a fire in the belly. Same with Giddo. Giddo was a gun overseas because he had a point to prove.
Hmm.
He was angry. When you go over for money, you lose the passion. You lose the anger. And I can say maybe that because I did it. I did it.
Maybe this changes that.
Yeah, do you know that if you're going overseas, then maybe you do know you can go to have your red wine and cheese down on the French Riviera because you know that's your stock standard. You're not having to play for the Wallabies. You don't have a chance. Whereas if you know you're going overseas and you still have the opportunity to don the green and gold, then maybe you still stay in shape and you improve. I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the argument. South Africa are the archetype for letting their players go wherever, picking them. Well, they're the best team in the world. Well, champions, 2 World Cups in a row. But then you look at Ireland, they're consistently the best team in the world between World Cups, and they're the exact opposite. They're all about centralization. They're all about having few clubs, continuity, picking players in consistent positions. And I'm sitting on the fence with this. I don't really have an opinion one way or the other. And I don't know if anyone could, because if you ask a player, of course, they're going to be pro the money. If you ask an administrator, of course, they're going to be pro Super Rugby. So it's very hard to have a fair or valid opinion, I think. And I think if you're rusted on, probably don't like it because you want Super Rugby to be good. A bit more casual, you're probably all for it because you want the Wallabies to be competitive. Yeah. Makes it very hard to answer. I would just say right now, who would I bring back if I was picking the Wallabies? Will Skelton, I would bring him back in a heartbeat. And then other than that, I would consider Karevi and Korobetti. Probably wouldn't rush to bring anyone else back right
now. Those two models where you got your island, all about centralization, your boppies go out, we'll call you when we need you. Two ones that are working, and you look at Australia that hedge their bits, they try and have it both ways, 10, 11 in the world.
Yeah, there you go from the in-between. I don't know, I'm sitting on the fence with that one. Anyway, boys, my phone just died, so I actually cannot access any more Twitter questions. But I think that was a fantastic variety of questions. Thank you, everyone who wrote in. Apologize if I didn't read it out. My phone's literally dead. And there was quite a few crossovers.
I got one question here. I've got it open with my phone if you don't mind me just running this one. Taking over as 100% host.
Bullshit, but yeah, let's go.
Blake, this one's to you actually, Matt.
What are the odds?
In one word or less, Fiji and Drua or Hurricanes?
Hurricane.
There's another one up here just come in as a reply. Richard, I hope you don't mind. This one's for Blake as well. In one word or less, Reds or Highlanders?
Reds.
Richard, you got any tweet questions there? Any coming through on your phone?
Do you know what? I'm just sitting back enjoying this, Jim. Please carry on.
Because it's another fuck, they're storming in here, Blake, in two words or less.
For me, two words.
Preferably less. Blues or Brumbies?
The Blues.
And this one, in three words or less, Western Force or Crusaders and HBF Park?
Western Force. Was it three or two? I forgot. Couldn't remember.
I was three. So the Western Force, good on you.
The motherfucking Western Force. I wanted four, baby. They're winning this one. They pit Rodders back.
You can't have
Rodders back. Actually, we haven't discussed Curtley's return on this. How have we avoided that landmine?
He's running on it. 15. Straight in.
Looks shredded too. Looks really fit.
Richard, anything to add on the next round coming up?
No, I think Blake just summarized that really, really well. I would agree with all those. Yep. Canes, Reds, Blues, Force. Yep, let's go.
All right, boys. Always fun.
Absolutely. And thanks, boys.
I can see you, lads.